All right, welcome to Planning Commission tonight. Thank you for being here. Dee, we always appreciate you being here, and commissioners and staff. Any public comments? No public comments. So do you want to do agenda item three or just?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so we will move to agenda item three, consideration of a conditional use permit by Amani Agriculture at Prime 90 at 190 North Cutler Drive. And Mackenzie.
Thank you. I am not sure if the applicant will be joining us tonight. I did invite him and encourage him to attend. If he does join us, it will be over Zoom. So we'll just check after I give my presentation. This all came about earlier this year in the summer when we received a code enforcement complaint from one of the tenants at 190 North Cutler Drive. The complaint was that there was a noxious odor that smelled like chemicals, maybe chlorine was the best comparison they could provide us, coming from suites B and C in this building. They also noted that at that time, the big problem was there was a cement mixer, one of just the little ones, that was running in the parking lot and making just a fugitive dust. So we immediately responded and contacted the person running that cement mixer, who then brought it inside and said, we won't do it anymore, it'll all happen indoors, which that has been consistent. We have not had any issues in the parking lot since. Now, regarding the odors, it is a hard thing for code enforcement because they are subjective. Some people might notice it more than others, etc. But we have received numerous complaints from those neighbors, and we've actually responded real time to a few of them, Sherry and our code enforcement officer on one of them, where they also noted the chlorine-like smell, which was seeping from those other units. I have since seen a real reduction in those calls, and I don't know, they're still there. I know they're still operating. I don't know if it has been because the applicant has made efforts to secure some of the walls where you might see those leaks, the roof line, those types of things. I don't know if it's because they're manufacturing differently, but either way, the complaints have reduced quite a bit. So because of all this, we also were alerted to the fact that the applicant was operating a business without proper licensing, being a business license. And after doing more research, we uncovered there were three businesses operating at this location without a single license. They were registered with the state, but not even on our radar at all. So the applicant occupies suites B and C, which are the middle two units in this existing building. Suite A is occupied by the owner of the building, who does TruTech Laser and it's like Mountain West Manufacturing or something like that, but they do ammunition. And then Suite D is wine cellars and, I'm so sorry guys, I had these all memorized. S-E-L-L, nope, sorry, it's C-E. But either way, they run two businesses out of there that they drop ship out of. So it's mostly just office, some like technical work, that kind of thing. But they are not doing anything hazardous to any level. As far as the existing conditions go, we're not concerned at all about the parking or anything like that. But what we did uncover is that Amani Agriculture was the first business that came about. They claim to manufacture soil amendments, which they have been very clear to state are not traditional fertilizers. They are made of a special M2 mineral mixture or something like that. He's a scientist and knew how to explain it to me and went way over my head. But this bacterial balance that helps reduce the need for water and the traditional fertilizers and items like that. So they claim it's a non-toxic species of bacteria and minerals, calcium and magnesium mixed into a dry powder and packaged. And the equipment used for Amani Agriculture is going to be the small cement mixer ribbon blender designed for soil and plastic pellets for the finished product. So through further research, we also uncovered that they are operating a business called Prime 90 at this location. Prime 90 manufactures nutritional supplements for dogs, cats, livestock, and when I got on their website, they also make nutritional supplements for humans. That was not included in the original application, but it is made out of mixing trace minerals such as cobalt, iron, calcium, magnesium, copper, boron, etc., listed on your staff report. And he did note that the exact formula varies by the animal, and the finished product is either a liquid, or the liquid is dried and then the liquid is sprayed onto a dry bran like thing. He compared it to salt licks that you get at IFA and that type, that are given to the animals. So both of those businesses have been classified as miscellaneous manufacturing. And this happened in July prior to the official code initiation or code amendment initiation by council for our land use table and conditional uses. So they had a complete application before that. This is the last one we have that came in before that. And that's why we can process it today. It's not subject to the state statute limiting us to process anything until the code is amended per city council. The last business that they are operating at this location is the CBD Doctors, and they are using the property for drop shipping and office work only, and no manufacturing is done or any warehousing or that type of thing on this site. And so that one I just classified as general office, as I've done with other drop shippers in the city. So I just want to make sure I don't miss anything huge. Okay, the other thing, when we were investigating, the companies associated with this property and these two suites were selling this product called Sanimax. And it's a sanitizing liquid detergent. I don't know what the proper terminology is, but what I do know is that it's made out of a chlorine dioxide component. And the applicant believed that the chlorine-like smell was actually coming from that and the manufacturing of that. He said he started manufacturing that in 2020 as COVID was happening. And since COVID, he has stopped manufacturing at the location and also not been selling it. So he agreed to take it off all the websites and remove all of the remaining materials and all of the raw materials used to create that product. There's a lot of chemicals and materials happening in these businesses, and more than I even know how to quantify. So the applicant was required by the fire district to submit safety data sheets. They call them SDSs. Yep. And the fire department has reviewed them. They had, I think, some back and forth about the quantities. I spoke with our fire marshal, and he explained to me that the fire code allows for chemicals and materials to be stored on the premise, but they have to be documented. The fire marshal noted that if the material is corrosive or flammable, it has to be stored in a special cabinet or storage system, and it has to be limited in quantity to what's permitted on site. All non-corrosive or non-flammable chemicals, which are under the maximum allowable quantity as defined in the fire code, can be stored using good practices, and that's also defined in code. He kept saying maximum allowable quantity and good practices, and those are things that the fire department processes and enforces. So in a roundabout way, to be compliant with code and be done with this code enforcement case, the applicant has submitted a business license application and conditional use permit for all three businesses. We're doing it all under one because it's just one owner. He's operating this all as one thing. He has made attempts to reduce the potential impact of nuisance odors or discernible odors by sealing up the walls of Suites B and C. And he's also removed the chemicals and materials believed to have caused the chlorine-like odors that were reported. We, as the DRC, went back and forth on how to handle this. That's why it's been months. It's November, and this started in July. And ultimately, it boiled down to us going to the city attorney for some advice on how to proceed. And the city attorney recommended that the planning commission or to the Planning Commission that if the conditional use permit is approved, it include the following conditions: that the business shall not create any discernible odors from or related to the storage, manufacturing, or use of chemical materials or other substances, and the applicant permits city staff entry to the premise to inspect the unit warehouse whenever requested to ensure compliance with the conditions of approval. So he felt strongly that those needed to be included in our list of conditions. And then in addition to that, staff and the DRC are recommending that if the Planning Commission approve this conditional use permit, the conditions are that the applicant comply with all applicable regulations related to storage, quantity limits for associated chemicals, manufacturing materials, or other substances as determined by South Davis Metro Fire. The applicant shall inform the city and South Davis Metro Fire Agency prior to any additional chemicals, materials, or other regulated substances are stored, used, or manufactured on the site, which are not listed in the safety data sheets submitted as part of this application for inclusion or amendment of the conditional use permit as applicable. All manufacturing and storage activities shall be conducted indoors only, going back to the original code enforcement complaint. The business shall, oh, and then the two code or conditions that the city attorney has recommended. And then the last one is sufficient building modifications shall be made to the unit to ensure no discernible odor is emitted from the businesses, which may include but is not limited to additional ventilation, insulation, or ceiling between the neighboring units. I know this one's a lot. Sherry might have something to add. No? Okay. I am happy to answer any questions. And can you tell me if the applicant has joined the Zoom? Okay, so the applicant is not with us. I will do my best to answer any questions, though.
So, Commissioner Jorgensen, is this the longest conditional use permit application we've ever seen with 175 pages of chemical safety data sheets?
Yes.
I'm just saying my turn, I probably have. But to that point, you know, it's complicated, especially when they're all in different formats and all that, but to try to get a sense of what we're dealing with. And the reason I am is this is not the manufacturing district. So we're putting it in a general commercial district, and we have adjacent tenants, and we have public, and we have all those kind of things. And I think obviously the city would agree that we take public safety pretty seriously. And so, you know, this is not probably the ideal location for 20 some odd chemicals of varying degree of hazard. Make sense of all those safety data sheets. I just went to one common thing, and it's the NFPA Diamond, if anybody's familiar with NFPA Diamond, but it tells you what the fire hazard is, what the health hazard is, and what the reactivity hazards are, and any unique hazards like radiation or whatever. And then that gives you a sense of, I mean, because I don't know what these things are, but you can compare them to chemicals like, you know, natural gas and sulfuric acid. And so that's what I did, just as a point of comparison. But at the end of the day, you do have not a lot of way of fire hazards or reactivity, although there's some of that, but there was definitely some health hazards. So hopefully, you know, this individual, if he's got employees, has got a good industrial hygienist and they're following all the proper PPE requirements, but that's not the city's problem. But the city's problem would be, how do you make sure that this isn't unsafe to adjacent tenants? And so all this stuff is great, but this stuff's not totally benign. I have no idea the quantities, because that's an open question. So I'm assuming it's a relatively small operation. But anyway, at the end of the day, you know, as I looked at this, I thought it was a really good set of conditions. But there's a couple things that I would make observations on. One would be, is the South Davis Metro Fire isn't the ultimate jurisdictional agency. There can be others when you're talking about chemical safety. Could be EPA, it could be OSHA, it could be others. So like on the first condition, we probably ought to broaden it to not just, you know, make it sound like South Davis is the ultimate one, but at the end that there could be other jurisdictional regulating agencies. So I think I would want to, if I make the motion, want to append that just to clarify that, you know, they're not the one and only. They enforce fire code and all these other things, but there could be other agencies that would have a say as to how these things are stored or used, or if there's emergency response procedures and all kinds of things like that. So that's one thought. And the other one is because it isn't an area that would be accessible to others, you know, so you probably need to think about trying to limit access of unauthorized personnel. So, you know, if they're mixing these chemicals and there are health hazards and there are potential interactions between chemicals that might be spilled and that bad stuff could happen, I mean, I don't know. But you probably don't want John Q. Public just walking through a door without any restrictions or any warnings. So I do think there ought to be something to the effect that there's, you know, access to the manufacturing area be physically restricted to authorized personnel only, something like that, just to make it clear that it's not just open to anybody who wants to come in. You know, if you've ever had a welding shop or you've ever dealt with industrial processes, that's not uncommon to try to restrict access to those facilities. You don't want somebody walking in and looking at a welding arc, right?
Can I?
Two thoughts.
Clear up.
So basically what it would come down to is of the six staff recommendations, I certainly agree with all of them. I think that's excellent. I would amend number one at the end, add and other jurisdictional regulating agencies, and at the end of number three, at the end, add and access to chemical manufacturing areas shall be physically restricted to authorized personnel only. Anyway, that's my perspective, and I've dealt a lot with industrial stuff, so that's why I think about NFPA diamonds and things like that too.
Okay.
Anyway, welcome differing points of view, but I do think that we have some obligation as a city and as planning commission to think about public safety. And
can I clear up two items? I've noted those changes. One thing I didn't mention is that part of this has been a problem because the applicant does not work on site every day. My understanding is he's there when he needs to make more batches or when he needs to ship something out or whatever that looks like, which has caused an issue with us not being able to go knock on the door for code enforcement like we typically would for our first response. So my understanding is that building is typically locked, those two suites, unless he's there, which is very irregular. The other thing to note is he has not informed me by any way that there are any employees other than himself operating out of this location. So those, not saying anything about your conditions, I think those are still great. It's just the additional information that I left out.
Commissioner Holbrook, McKenzie, can you describe what one of the conditions being that city staff have entry to the premises? What power or what is already built in for South Davis Fire to enter at will?
So if there is exigent circumstances where they believe there's imminent danger, they have right of entry to that property. So if they believe that there is dangerous chemicals that exceed the limits or are not approved to be stored there, then they have the right to enter that property.
Is there any advantage to giving them broader access similar to city staff?
Yeah, we could add that. We could add city staff or the fire district, and that I think that would be a great addition to that. And just to go a little bit, the number one chemical that we were really afraid of was the sodium nitrite. It had been in some blue barrels that were 55-gallon drums. There were two of them. It looked like one was unsealed. The neighbors did get a picture of those and submit those to us. And then I looked them up, and I was like a little bit concerned about the quantities and the properties of that particular chemical that was used to make the Sanimax. And so when we met with the applicant and showed him that we had the pictures of those, and then he said, oh, I haven't made that Sanimax for a long time. I haven't sold any. I will remove all of that from the property, and I will stop selling that and remove it from the website. Because that was, if it gets wet, it then smells like chlorine. If it dries again, it could be possibly hazardous or explosive. And so we were very concerned about that particular chemical being in the location. And so I feel satisfied at this point that he has removed them. He will continue to remove them and keep them off the property, but we do want to be able to inspect that property on occasion and unannounced, just to make sure.
Sorry, this is Commissioner Snow. I have a question about the SDS sheets. Are they, I don't know if you maybe already said this and I missed it, are they like just self-declared, or is it like Is there some sort of, like, is an outside entity coming in to confirm?
So that would be the fire marshal. So when he does his inspections, his yearly inspections, or any random inspections, if anything is found in there that is not on the SDS sheets that has been submitted, then he would be in violation and could be ticketed. And it could possibly result in us bringing that back before you to revoke his conditional use permit and business licenses.
The fire department has done an inspection. I am not certain that the applicant didn't conveniently move some things prior to the inspection for the business license because those are scheduled. I don't know that. That's just a thought I have, and it probably shouldn't have been said on the record, but we're here. The other thing, though, is that we have had so many discussions with the fire marshal and the fire inspector on this business, and they, based on the information they've been given, based on their site visit, they are not the slightest bit concerned at this point with the information they have. And we have been trying to be as transparent and forthright as possible with everything we've uncovered.
And we also contacted the health department and made them aware of the situation and asked them to investigate. So, but their investigation didn't show anything that they were concerned about. I'm not sure how thorough their investigation was either.
I have a question about just your interactions, I guess, with the applicant and also... for me, I have a lot of pause because the only reason we know about this is because other people have told the city about it, right? And so clearly they're not extremely forthcoming. And also the lack of business licenses, a lot of things are just like where you're discovering things as we go along. So is that history problematic presently or...
It means that we're going to monitor the situation much more carefully. We can only take him on his word. This is on the advice of the city attorney, of that he has brought his property into compliance, that he isn't going to violate. We can't punish somebody for what they might violate in the future. If he does violate this, and we've been very clear and explicit on these conditions, then we have a case to revoke his business license and his conditional use permit. So we have to give him the opportunity for due process and the ability to rectify his error in not being forthright in the very beginning. But we had a very frank conversation, Mackenzie and I, with him. And once I showed him the pictures and the websites that I had looked up, and he was like, oh, yeah, I didn't know I needed to do that. And maybe that's not being honest or not. I'm not going to accuse him of either of those, but he says that he thought he just needed to apply for one of the licenses. We explained to him he needed to apply for all of the business activities that are going there. He needed to disclose all of the SDS sheets, which is when we got the 175 pages. So we feel like at this point that we have gotten him to understand the gravity of the situation and to be forthright with everything. Because we basically said to him, if you can't be forthright with us, then we cannot go forward and recommend that the Planning Commission even entertain this conditional use permit. And that was when he then came forward with all of those items. So
one thing, he came forward and then he said, oh, by the way, I sometimes also do a hobby of making or repairing violins here. And I was like, okay, we don't need to get into that. You're fine. Make your violins. But I think that's the instrument. I just want to remind you guys that the option of tabling this until you can have the applicant before you is always there. If you don't feel comfortable as a commission approving at this point and you want to talk to the applicant. So just a reminder for those commissioners who have maybe not experienced this before.
Commissioner Marsh, so what does due process look like in terms of when it comes to, and I know neither of you were attorneys, but when it comes to if we were to make a motion with these amendments and then with the additional amendment to allow city staff the same authority as we're potentially considering allowing the fire marshal, is that permissible? Is that
yes.
okay with the city?
Yes, that was advised by the city attorney to put those conditions in. Absolutely.
For the fire act, for the fire marshal access, but also for city
for
staff?
For us, yes. He specifically
said. And that is in the
staff.
Motion?
Yes.
Okay.
And as far as the due process part of it goes, it's a conditional use permit, so we have to process it and hear the application. We have to determine if there are conditions that can be placed on the applicant that will mitigate any of the negative or harmful or possibly harmful effects of this business. If we feel like there aren't conditions that sufficiently address those, then you have the ability to deny it. If you feel like that there are conditions that can be placed on it that will let him operate and will be in compliance, then we are required to do that. We're required to issue the conditional use permit with conditions that will mitigate any of the issues that we believe are or have been brought to light.
And so currently city staff, city attorney, everyone from that side feels okay with proceeding?
Yes, and we've had the city attorney review this staff report, review all of the conditions, and he made some corrections to them and to the wording so that it met what his standard would be in case there comes an issue in the future.
And we don't always have the city attorney review our conditional use permits. That did not make me sweat at all.
All right, any discussion among the commission as moving forward to a motion? Or anybody want to make one?
I just have a comment, maybe it's a question. I feel hesitant to do this because of all the things that we discussed, but I also feel like as an administrative thing, it's like, as Sherry was saying, it's like we essentially, as long as the conditions are there, mm-hmm. That's what we're deciding on. Okay.
So the decision, since it's administration, if we tabled it, would be to have a discussion with the applicant with some of these things that, like, Commissioner Jorgensen has brought up to make sure that narrative is...
Right, okay.
And I have not got any feedback from the applicant on the conditions at all. We haven't had any discussion about that.
And also, like, conversation on, like, is there potential to have more employees there? We want to get this conditional use permit right, because once it's filed, then it does kind of go into just code enforcement. Personally, that's my...
It also would get the applicant on the record that he agrees to abide by those conditions.
Yeah.
I would vote to table. That's my personal feeling on this.
Would you like to make a motion to table?
Okay. Oh, is that a motion?
If you would like to make it a motion.
You just can say...
Should I?
Okay. Give it a try, Commissioner Stone. You got this.
I will make a motion to table.
Okay, we have a motion from Commissioner Stone to table. Do we have a second?
So is that pending participation in the meeting and the discussion with the applicant, or just a table indefinitely?
Pending clarify that? Discussion with the applicant.
Okay. All right, so we have a motion on the table to table pending a conversation with the applicant. Is that
correct?
Okay, and do we have a second?
I'll second it, Commissioner Ward.
Any other comment or discussion on the motion? All in favor say aye.
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 Nay.
Any opposed?
Yes.
All right, we got Commissioner Marsh as a nay, so the motion to table passes.
One thing to note with this one, you guys, going forward, what I'm going to do is report back to the applicant and try to line out either the next planning commission meeting for him to be able to be here, and if not that, hopefully our only meeting in December. So I will keep you posted with the agenda as that approaches.
So is this person still operating in that space even while this is happening, or is it like...
Yes.
Okay.
To my knowledge, yes. So.
All right, thank you to the staff and to the attorney and everybody that looked into that to get that so aligned, and hopefully we'll get it worked out and moved forward soon. And then moving to agenda item 4, work session pending code amendment with Sherry.
Okay, hot off the presses for you. And this portion of the document is almost done. Was having some problems as I was working through the CUP ordinance, and I don't think I put anything. Yeah, we didn't put anything in the PowerPoint. With the red line document, because as you remember, our table was so huge and had so many items in it that it was really getting overwhelming and very difficult to understand as I was going through the red line documents. So started brainstorming with Mackenzie, and we came up with the idea that what we should do is just do a clean table of what the uses are. And the first step was to reorganize them into categories. So I have reorganized them all of the land uses into 19 categories, starting with accessory uses, agricultural, automotive, banking, building, contracting, and construction supplies, education and schools, entertainment, general office, healthcare, hospitality, manufacturing and assembly, mining and support activities, personal services, religious institutions, retail trade, social services, transportation and freight, and utilities and public services, and warehousing and wholesale trade. You shall notice that those are alphabetical, so they'll be really easy to follow through. And I've broken them out into these tables. Sorry, I dropped my pen. So I would like for you to be able to go over these, and then we'll review them more in depth at the next meeting. But there are a few things that I wanted to go over specifically just to kind of get some feedback from the Planning Commission so that I can continue to amend these. So I've taken them, I put them all into categories, and then I started compressing the uses down. If you look at these tables, you will see boxes that are green or boxes that are red. If it's a box that is green, it means I promoted it from a conditional use to a permitted use. If it's a red box, I demoted it from a permitted or conditional use to a prohibited use or not permitted use. Then I have some that are highlighted in yellow, ones that I think that we probably should talk a little bit about. And then under the column heading under specific use standards, I've started to line out what the specific use standards need to be addressed for each one of these. Once I have them all compressed, and I am all the way down through retail trade, so I'm in the retail trade section right now, so in the R's, but I had already done the manufacturing and the utilities and public services because I had those at the top of the table, but when I alphabetized them, it threw them all the way to the end. So this really is almost done with all of the compression of the various items. There are some other items in here that I've identified that are uses that we need to add in that are specifically not in our code, like we need to talk about bars and taverns and breweries, some of those things that we just made the alcoholic beverages changes, and so some of those things are in there. And then over in the very last column where I had the numbers before, the line numbers are 1, 2, 3, I've went and numbered all of these. So the first uses are the number 1, so 1-1, 1-2, and then each use, like automotive, is 3, so all of the lines are 3-1, 3-2. So the one we're talking about it, we can have an easier time finding that on the charts. And then I've also alphabetized those subcategories underneath all of those categories. So I may have missed some that haven't been compressed, or there may be more room for compressing them as we go forward. But these are kind of, this is where we're starting from here. And then once I have this completed, then we're going to start working on the actual Chapter 19 sections with the standards for all of these uses that need standards. And so just to kind of go over, I'm just going to kind of run through some of these that I wanted to talk to you about. And they may fix themselves as we kind of go forward. We've had some conversations that I didn't go back on with Mackenzie earlier today. When we were speaking about car dealerships or other dealerships, We were trying to think about in the CS zone whether or not we even wanted to have car dealerships. So if you think about the CS zone, that's where Janet's Sunshine Cafe is. There's a small portion over by on Orchard Drive. What's that development called? What I'm blanking on. where Times and Season is, and then Weininger's, where the old Weininger's was, and then over on 2600 South, where there's the South Fork Hardware and the Apollo Burger. That's neighborhood, or that's commercial shopping area. So that's the CS zone. So as we were thinking about that, do we want to have, how do you feel, I would like to know how you feel about having car dealerships there. One of the discussions that we had was, one of the problems that we have with car dealerships are these little tiny car dealerships, because they don't have enough room for the storage of their vehicles. And so we started talking about putting a minimum lot size if they're going to have outdoor display of vehicles, that they had to have a minimum lot size, and then putting some standards in about how many cars they can have. So maybe it might be an acre, but if we had somebody that wanted to not display any cars and they were only sold or shown inside of the dealership, do we really care if it's in the CS zone or not? So that was kind of a question that we had for you on that.
Some of us in the recently annexed area, Commissioner Marsh, have strong feelings about that.
I'm not. Your strong feelings are probably similar to our strong feelings.
Why don't you express them?
Because there's a car dealership at the end of 8th West that continued to put their cars on the street during the day. And made all sorts of a mess. Yeah. And there was no enforcement between North Salt Lake and Bountiful in the county. And so there was jurisdictional issues. But now that we've been annexed, those jurisdictional issues get to get solved by Sherry.
Yes. And we'd actually have one of our officers working on that, as well as code enforcement. The other part, we need to have some regulations about how many cars these businesses can have, because they are definitely always exceeding their storage capacity. They'll come in and tell us they're only going to have 5 or 10 cars, and then next thing we know, they have 50.
I will say we did approve one, the one by across from Wendy's, and I will say I passed that one a lot, and there's never extra cars there, so I am happy about that one.
Because they went out of business.
Oh, they did?
No. On record, I came back from maternity leave and went to Wendy's and saw a real mess of cars and filed a code enforcement violation.
Oh, good.
So since then, they've been great.
Well, if we're talking about the CS zone, I'm just going to say I don't want car dealerships in the CS zone.
It seems like we have more than enough places along Highway 89
and everywhere else,
so that we've got plenty of them. I think we need to accommodate them everywhere.
Yeah, let's limit them where
we
can.
We really ought to keep some areas for shopping.
Yeah, we don't need another car dealership.
Great. I love that. I'm happy to make those an N. So some of the other things I want to point out is like wholesale of motor vehicles. We had somebody that had wanted to do wholesale of motor vehicles, and right now it's a permitted use in the CG zone. They wanted to do it where we are putting Clifton Place townhomes. They went away, thank goodness. They didn't get the property under contract, but I wanted to take care of that right here, because they were going to import cars from Canada and bring them to the site and then change the odometers out or the speedometers out and then wholesale them to somebody else. We wouldn't even get sales tax or property tax off of it. It would just be a lot on our main frontage. So those are some of the things that I've knocked out and made that a non- permitted use. And then as far as if they are going to be permitted in the MD zone, I don't want them to be along Redwood Road or Center Street or 1100 North. They should be in the interior of the MD zone. So those are some of the types of restrictions that we are proposing to put on there. If you turn over to the banking page, section 4, one of the new things that I've put in there that I just wanted to make you aware of is credit intermediation means a lot of things under the Bureau of Labor Statistics and the NAICP?
NICS.
Yeah, that one. There's so many acronyms out there. Never mind, I won't go with that one. Anyway, there's been some discussion with other applicants as they've come in as to what that means. And in my book, it means, it also means mortgage brokers and financial managers, but it also means check cashing, check loan, payday loans, title loans. And so I wanted to know how you felt about those types of businesses, whether they should be permitted or not permitted. I think they're the scourge of the earth, but...
Commissioner Marsh, I would highly say no to that. I don't know if anyone has any strong feelings aside from myself, but yeah, I agree that they're the scourge of the earth.
Yeah, I think they're a real problem for...
And I'm only saying that because you said it first, Sherry.
Yeah. They really take advantage of poor people, lower income people who get into financial trouble with these businesses. And they're just legal loan sharking, in my opinion. And I'll be quite frank about that. I would tell them to their face that, and have, when they've tried to come in, because we prohibited them in the highway commercial zone. And so we've had some that have tried to come and file for business licenses, and we've told them that no, that they're specifically prohibited in that zone already. So I don't have any problem telling them that. I wanted to find out, we had right now in the CG zone, pawn shops are listed as a conditional use, and I wanted to make that a not permitted, if everyone is okay with that. I don't have a problem if it's in the MD zone. We have an existing pawn shop that's in our CH zone. They'd be grandfathered in. But
aren't they going out of business?
I think they might be.
They had a sign out that said they were going out of business.
So if they go out of use for 12 months.
For 10 years.
we'd really need to keep track of that when they close to make sure that we know the date, because if they go out of business for longer than 12 months, somebody can't come in and restart that business. It would have to be a legal business, not a non-conforming business.
Because they could come back in on the conditional use, or
no, we would not if we make it. Well, they're already CH. They're already zone CH, so they're already non-conforming in that zone. The pawn shop is non-conforming.
Isn't that surrounded by Bountiful, like on the other sides of the property? It's like an island in North Salt Lake. I just
except for those apartments that are right next door.
Okay.
Those are in North Salt Lake.
Yeah, okay.
So it and those little apartments are North Salt Lake. Yeah. And then it's Bountiful on the other sides of them. Let's see. One of the things I made in Section 5, some changes that I'm making are... Right now we have construction and contractor office only use, and then we had construction and contract services that had outdoor storage. I wanted to address any on-site storage, because some of the contractor services are like those, they operate in those contractor boxes where they have the roll-up doors and they store their plumbing or their electrical supplies inside. So they still have on-site storage. They have more than just an office. And so I wanted to make it so that they could have the indoor storage, but then regulate the outdoor storage if they did have outdoor storage, and only allow that outdoor storage in the MD and MG zones for contractors' offices. Let's see, we moved down to the education and schools training zone or section. There's one section that I've added there, and it's under just kind of added with, we already have educational support services, but it wasn't defined. So I looked that up, and I think that would be referring to tutoring or occupational therapy or speech therapy. Just wanted to make sure that we have that identified. And then adding, we have passenger vehicle driving schools, but we had other professional schools, but we didn't say specifically professional, like CDL driving schools, and those should only be allowed in the MD and MG zone rather than being S rated as S's under the other two zones, which, you know, I wouldn't want to approve a tractor trailer semi truck school in the general commercial zone or the other zone. Under entertainment, so this is where a lot of uses got compressed. The amusement centers and arcades, I've compressed that down for the uses like bowling, axe throwing, trampolining, skating, pickleball, which pickleball could also fit in a different category, so that's why I've highlighted it, mini golf. I am looking at the amusement and theme park. I think maybe that should be a no on those, a not permitted. Would seem highly unlikely that we would get a lagoon in North Salt Lake.
We could get an Evermore.
Maybe, but
because of such a smashing success.
Remember, if we make something not permitted and somebody actually comes in and wants to do that, they could always apply for a code change, and then we could adopt appropriate standards if we wanted it. So this is never the end all. The category athletic club, fitness, and recreational sports. So in that, I've also put the pickleball there, but with tennis and volleyball and swimming. And some of the things that we need to address there in the code are the parking requirements and tournaments and how they operate. Obviously, we've learned some lessons from the club v volleyball place. Let's see, I've added the botanical gardens and nature parks as a permitted use to the CS zone. I didn't see that would be an issue. I had a question about golf courses. I really don't see us getting a golf course in any of these commercial zones, so I would, if you're okay with that, I'd like to make those all not permitted. Taking museums from a conditional use in the MG zone to a not permitted zone. I don't think we really want a museum over at the sewer plant or at the refinery.
Yeah, once they close down.
We have the use of racetracks as conditional uses. I'm wondering if anybody sees any need to have racetracks as a use in our MD or MG zones.
I picture the go-kart racing that they do in warehouses.
So we could go and add go-kart into amusement section and then take racetracks out, because racetracks could imply something much bigger than go-karts.
Yeah.
Would that be all okay if I added that there? Right.
Yeah. K1 speed, that's what it's called.
And then the last one in that section that I think maybe we should take a look at prohibiting would be drive-in movie theaters. I don't see us getting one of those in the industrial zone or anywhere. That's kind of with streaming services, not many people are doing that anymore. General office I was able to compress most of those down. The ones that I left out of compressing down would be call centers or data processing, and then employment placement centers, because there, if you've ever been inside of a call center, let's say our office code says that we have to provide one parking space for every 200 square feet of floor area, they will put maybe maybe those cubicles for each employee are maybe 4 feet by 4 feet, so 16 square feet. So they could fit, 15 employees in that 200 square feet, as opposed to the one in an office of 200 square feet. And the parking impact is much higher than a regular general office. So that's why I left that out as a different use. And then moving down to healthcare, I've compressed everything that I could kind of think of. Some of the new uses that I've put in here we do need to think about the different hospitals and surgical centers and whether they should be conditional or whether it should just be permitted. I don't necessarily have a problem with making them permitted as long as we come up with conditions. If everybody's okay with that, I will move forward on that. But some of the, on the next page over, you see a use that I think is one that's going to come up, and that's this new use for medical spas. So that's the estheticians, the IV fluids, the laser treatments, the skincare, the weight loss types of uses. We haven't had anybody ask us for those yet, but I've seen them coming. We have the IV center over there by Smith's in Woods Cross, if you haven't seen that.
Definitely.
So I don't know how you feel about those, but I think that's probably a use that we need to address. Mm-hmm. And then under hospitality, the items that I think that we need to address, again, are bar establishments, banquet and reception centers, restaurant bars, restaurant breweries, because we added all of those uses to our alcoholic beverage ordinance so that the city can license those, and now we just need to determine where those would be. And so I'm going to assume that you don't mind those being in anywhere where the MD or the CG zone, or where they aren't too close to a school.
Can we require samples?
I don't think we can.
Any reason not to include CS?
That's, if you tell me to put it there, I'll put it there.
I would advocate for CS as well.
Okay.
Second.
Okay. Because at the end of the day, they're going to be governed by their proximity to those locations, the community locations. So if even if they're in the CS zone, if they are too close to a school or a library, then they wouldn't be allowed to operate there. Let's see, under the manufacturing and assembly, so I've taken all of the categories that we went through this before a few weeks ago, and I've put them into the categories of either heavy manufacturing or light manufacturing or the heavy or light assembly sections under bullet points. And I've left a couple out that I think might need special conditions or might not want to be permitted in the same zones. And that would be repair of commercial and industrial machinery and equipment, and then the non-metallic mineral product manufacturing. So that's like the Amcor, the Old Castle, where they make the bricks, and then the concrete services and batching plants. So I think we want to have standards for those, but we don't want to have those in the same zones as the other uses. Mining and support activities, that's just basically been compressed. So mineral extraction basically is in the SR zone, which we don't have any property that's zoned SR, but I wanted to make sure it was very clear that any that use was prohibited in these zones, and that they would need to see the SR zone or SR zone chapter 17 for how and where they can do mineral extraction. And then condensing down these other oil, gas, refinery, and support activities into one category. Personal services get into things like animal care and pet services and boarding. I was particularly interested about what you might feel about animal care, boarding, or daycare for and kennels for pets in the CS and CG zone. I'm wondering if you have any thoughts or concerns about that type of use.
Do we have any
kennels? We have some in the CH zone, so we have, and we have some in the MD zone. So we have a couple down in the MD zone. We have a CG zone one that's in that old Ball or Kelly property. Yeah, so we one over there, and then we have one just south of here in the CH zone.
I'm just thinking if chlorine smell is a problem in the CG, then animals gonna be worse. If we're trying to mitigate odor, then.
But there are things that we can do. There are conditions that we can put in standards for that too, as we've used them in the MD zone. And honestly, I haven't gotten any complaints from the townhomes that are right here next to the dog kennels that are right down here between just before City's Edge development.
Oh, yeah.
There's a, and they've been there for years and years and years. So.
I think when we're building places for like young professionals to live, that is a service that is utilized by people that aren't having their animals just be like animals. These are like they're small
their children.
Little puppies, and so I am not opposed to it. I think it would be a good service to have along the corridor for especially as some of these residential buildings move in that have young professionals moving in.
Specified size or capacity or something. Just to
I can't hear you. Can you speak into your microphone? Sorry.
I'm just wondering if we could specify in whatever zone to specify like size or capacity or something like that to kind of mitigate.
So there are
potential concerns. I agree with Ray or Commissioner Larson.
But in the table, we make them conditional then instead of just permitted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
And there are size and capacity and disposal,
right,
cleanliness regulations that we've adopted as by adopting Davis County's new robust animal control ordinance. They actually have addressed all of those things for us in that code that we now that we also adopt. By
so proxy. would you then want them to be permitted versus conditional?
I think they could be permitted
because. If
yeah.
Davis County is
there, are, yeah, there are sufficient standards in place. But we can also specify, I will review what their standards are and make sure that they're everything that we can think of. And if there isn't, then we can add additional things.
Because if they already exist and there haven't been any complaints,
yeah.
and there are already two existing standards, then.
Yeah, it would be good to match with the with their standards for sure. So I will do more review on that one and report back to you. Let's see. One of the uses that's listed as not permitted in any zone is cemetery and crematoriums. I don't know how you feel about that. I did a little bit of research just on crematoriums, and they do have some harmful pollutants that they put into the air, I guess you could say, coming from.
So I just speaking of this, I just finished the book by Caitlin, what's her name? Smoke Gets in Your Eyes, about the history and working in the crematorium and death industry, and have odd personal ties there, but that's a different story. But there is a new form of cremation called aquamation, where basically they dissolve the body in essentially lye, and then grind up the bones, and instead of emitting a bunch of smoke, you're dissolving the body. So something to consider. I agree that cremation is polluting.
I can do some investigation on that and see if there are new standards that we could put in place on that.
And there's so that is. So are you then saying that
I'm saying it's
that funerary services in general, what did you say? Funeral homes and mortuaries would be permitted, but that what wouldn't be?
Well, so right now under the code, cemeteries and crematoriums not permitted in any zone.
So why would you not permit a cemetery?
I don't know. But what I'm saying is that if you'd like me to study that to see if there are new technologies that could be used that would make that have less of an environmental impact, then I will be happy to look at that and bring that back to you.
Also, I think cemeteries,
they might be two separate categories.
If I recall correctly, cemeteries are permitted or conditional in the residential zones.
Yeah, it would go right.
But not in the commercial zones.
Yeah.
And so it's like, do you want a cemetery in the middle of the shopping center, or do you want it in the middle of a neighborhood?
Well, and every time this comes up, there was a city council meeting about this a few months ago where they basically brought this up again, right? That's like, it comes up every 10 years, like, is the city going to have a cemetery? Because there is no North Salt Lake City Cemetery.
Yeah.
So if you grow up here, you die here, you go get buried in Bountiful. Either at the city cemetery or up on the bench.
But you pay three times as much, or your relative.
Yeah, and they charge you triple. So, because North Salt Lake doesn't have a cemetery, you are disadvantaged as a citizen.
And cemeteries are a losing.
It's a terrible business. Like, the city makes nothing on it. If
the city loses money off of them.
Yeah, it's terrible. And that was basically what city council. Yeah. Anyway. They agree that signing up for a money pit is not a good idea.
If we were going to plan to have a cemetery, we would need to find a suitable piece of land and put it in our land use plan that's what it was going to be.
Rather than trying to say it's going to fit within
these small commercial shopping zones or whatever. I just think that if the city wants to do that, they got to buy a piece of land and say that's what it's going to be.
Yeah, it's very true.
So rather than a whole cemetery, what's the... It's like a...
Mausoleums?
Basically where you're putting ashes and remains, right? So it doesn't take up nearly as much land, but it's still a peace garden or whatever, where then you're just putting cremated remains. Like,
I don't know what the technical definition of that is, but
I'll do some more study on that and bring some options back.
Because I mean, in the future, imagine like 5-10 years in the future, like people want to get cremated. Yeah, you don't want to get buried, but you want to get cremated and you want your remains to be in the city. And if the city could then say, okay, yeah, we see cemetery is a terrible idea, but like, here's a peace park with like a, you know, equipped mausoleum or whatever the technical term is, then you can have people that could, you know, have a resting place.
Well, it can also be a private venture too.
Right, like Lakeview.
Some cemeteries are private. They're not owned by municipalities. Yeah. So. Let's see, I have some of these things highlighted in this section just on the janitorial services, mostly just to remind me that I need to come back to them to put in proper standards for chemical disposal. And then I'm not really prepared to talk about retail trade because I really am just still in the middle of compressing those. I have a lot of things highlighted that I'm trying to figure out how to compress them into more general categories, because I'm looking at a lot of things, and if they're in a P, if there are a lot of things that are P's all the way across, then there's no reason to have them be in so many different categories unless I have specific standards for those categories. So I'm still compressing those, so we really don't need to go over those tonight. And in just to point out, in social services, I did put in homeless shelters as being not permitted in all zones, just to make sure that doesn't happen again. And I haven't really done anything with the transportation section, but the utilities and public services section, I have already done a lot of those sections. But then I added some sections at the end as I was sorting things, like postal services and telecommunications and satellite telecommunications. And so those still need to be sorted in there and compressed. And then wholesale trade still needs a little bit of work to move the items into various categories. So I'm almost there. Another day or two, I will have these parts done, and then I can start putting the other standards together into Chapter 19.
Thank
Sherry,
you.
Sherry, I'm curious, under warehousing and wholesale trade,
yes,
why our applicant earlier tonight wouldn't fall under other chemical and allied products wholesalers. That is not permitted in his zone.
Because he's not wholesaling it. He's actually manufacturing a product.
Which seems worse.
Yes, I would agree.
So, Sherry, really nice work. I really like the way you've organized in this. But so the old table that we had was loosely structured around the NICS tables that you brought up earlier, and you could see that. And sometimes there was all the detail, and sometimes it rolled up to a main category or whatever. Is there still kind of that structure, even though you've reorganized it and put it in alphabetical order and things like that? Or, I mean, could you go to that table, and even if it wasn't listed, you would know it roll up to the main category, and it would be whatever yeah. permitted or conditional, whatever?
It's loosely applied to that, because when I went through some of these uses, and I'm going, I don't even know what that use means, and then I would go to the table, and it would give me descriptions of those types of uses. So then I'd go put those types of uses in here, rather than the vague, broad title that nobody understood to even go look under. Like credit intermediation, a lot of people didn't understand what that is fully.
Were there any main categories that we just omitted because we don't expect it to ever see it, or is it mostly all here anyway?
It's mostly all there. I either put them in prohibited or collapse them into the same more general category, or if there are a few things that I thought, like that I went over with you tonight, like that I put into, well, I actually moved them down into prohibited to like zoos. I didn't think we were going to get a zoo or an amusement park, but they're still there. I'm just moving them to prohibited and listing them specifically. So what I would ask is that over the next 2 weeks, if you would go through this list as it stands, and if you see anything that you think should be prohibited, or you think of any uses that I haven't considered or that we need to consider and add, or things that you think we should take out and prohibit or not allow, then let's talk about it at our next work session in 2 weeks.
Sherry, sorry, not to beat a dead horse.
Go ahead.
But even in the manufacturing and assembly section, our previous applicant, the only thing I can see that they would fall into is manufacturing chemicals of compounding process of raw materials, flammable toxic matter, for the manufacturing process, that's also not permitted in his zone.
Well, right now, the one that they're falling into under our existing is miscellaneous manufacturing, because we have all these manufacturing lists, and then we don't, then we have miscellaneous.
Nothing with the word chemical in our existing?
Yeah, no.
Okay.
So, but that's something that we can add, and I can pay special attention to that, because I'm really very concerned about those types of uses.
I think that's something that potentially we add into the table as its own item, just because Inifis is a business on 700 West, and they manufacture vitamins. And that's not, the health supplement manufacturing doesn't feel as hazardous as fertilizer or those different types of cleaning products and that kind of thing. So, and those are additional standards we can put on that.
Yeah.
That. Thank you for bringing that to light.
And definitely that section is still not complete at this time. So I was mostly just trying to get everything into these categories so that we could see them and understand them and have discussions about them and make them then functional. Any other questions about it?
It looks so good.
It's a good start anyway. Thank you.
I'm sure other cities will love to copy your work.
Probably.
Thank you, Sherry. Did you want to make our homework very clear? What can we do for the next time to help that move smoothly for you?
So I would just go ahead and read through each one of these categories, and if you feel like something's in the wrong category, note it. If you feel like it should be prohibited, or if it feels like I've listed it as prohibited and you think it should be permitted, then just make note of those so that we can discuss them.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. Looks great.
And then also, if you think of any standards that, if you're looking at a use and say, well, that use might be okay, but you're going to want to make sure the standards deal with noise or something, or deal with parking, then just note that out to the side so that we can make special, we can make sure I put those in the standards.
Okay, correctly. Great. Thank you for clarifying that. That is helpful for me. All right, and then agenda item 5 is report on City Council action items.
So October 29th, we had a special session where the City Council went over the Hatch Park design process to date. It's coming along very well. They went over some designs for the, what are we calling that? The tower, the center icon. And then they looked at designs for the, or monument, yeah, the monument. And they went over the designs for the pavilions and the living room area. They showed them the three options on that and got feedback from the City Council on the options that they like and are going to refine the plan further for that. Last week on November 6th, the City Council did approve the site plan for Lofts North Salt Lake, so at 130 East, and approved the changes to the development agreement to make that happen. So really excited to see that go forward. They've already submitted their building permits, and so they're hoping to get under construction very soon. They have their funding in place, and I think it'll be great to see something finally happen on those properties. I just want to remind you that, let's see, I think we have Ryan and Bill are on our steering committee for the general plan, or Brandon and Ryan. And remind you of that meeting next Monday. I have responses from everybody except for Irene and Brianna about the work session with the City Council on December 3rd, if you're available.
Yes, I think I can make it.
Okay, so
when I get home, but I'll let
It'll start at 5:45 and dinner will be provided. So if you're here at 5:45, you can get your dinner and sit down, and then the work session will just last from 6 until 7.
Oh, you should have led with that dinner.
I will be here for sure.
There will be dinner for you on December 3rd, Tuesday, December 3rd. And then the city party is Friday, December 6th for the holiday party up at Eaglewood. I hope to see all of you there so you can get the awesome gift that Wendy has planned for us. Okay. Great.
All right. Thank you. And then approval of the minutes from October 8th. Any amendments to the minutes? And if not, we can do a motion.
Commissioner Jorgensen, I make a motion to approve the meeting minutes for the October 8th Planning Commission meeting as drafted.
Thank you. And a second?
Commissioner Holbrook, second.
Thank you, Commissioner Holbrook. And all in favor, say aye.
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 All right. And we are adjourned.